a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome on into the show. Scott Mitchell here. Alex Keery, of course, is on assignment too. Let's see. Let me give you an...
I can see the red taillights and the Spain.
That's right. Alex Keery's in Spain. And as a guest host tonight, we got an exciting show for you. We have Alexis Holt, who is the absolute super fan of the Utah Jazz. She's a 36-year-old mother of four boys, and she has been a Jazz fan forever. She's someone who kind of has a great perspective, thinks outside the box, and is going to give us some like amazing insight into what's happening with the Utah Jazz. Because let's face it, college football is basically over, so now we have to turn our attention to the Utah Jazz. Alexis, welcome.
Thank you.
Excited to have you here. This will be a lot of fun. All right. So our 705 cut is going to happen right now. And it's like, apparently, Alexis, things are so bad with you with the Jazz right now that you don't even want to watch. That's our 705 cut.
The cut at 705. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. It's 7:05. Here's what made the cut.
All right, so our show tonight, really exciting. We're going to talk a lot about the Jazz and get kind of take a really deep dive. And this is from the perspective of superfan. So Alexis is our superfan, and she is a Twitter maniac, and she has a lot to say about the Utah Jazz. And so I'm tell us what your Twitter handle is, and so people can follow you, because she cuts right to the chase with the Utah Jazz.
So my Twitter handle is MFLS forever.
Which is the names of your children.
The names of my children.
The first
letter.
Initial.
Okay. Yep, first initial of each of their names, and then the word forever.
Forever.
Yep, forever.
So your kids forever.
Yep, my kids right. Forever.
That's only like a mom. And by the way, it's halftime. The Jazz are in Minneapolis playing the Timberwolves. And it's kind of a boring game because it's tied. It's 59-59 and a half. So we're going to kind of be paying attention to the game as it goes along. But this whole idea, so we were talking before the show, and you said right now you're so frustrated with the Jazz that you can't even watch a game. And you're busy. What's going on there?
So for me, it's gotten kind of to the point the last couple weeks where – I just don't feel like I can give the effort. I've got so many things going on, and it's so hard to want to devote the time to watching this team right now, which is hard. It's a hard thing.
Okay, but why? So what is it that's going on with? Because I feel that way too, and I've had an excuse because I've had other things I've had to pay attention to, but I feel the same way. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to watch this.
Yeah,
it's like it's just not worth it. So why isn't it worth it to you? You talk about like other priorities, but what else is going on?
I think it's just even my mood, you know, like it's hard to want to watch these poor performances because they just take my mood down. It makes me so that I can't really, you know, I'm just not engaging with even my husband or my kids in the same way because I am so emotionally invested in the team and wanting them to do well. And so when I watch them, you know, have these bad games and, you know, you say it's a boring game, but this is a good game lately. Yeah.
I just meant that it was tied.
No, I know.
No one's winning. There's no excitement here. It's like it started 0-0. It's 59-59.
But in the last little bit, they've been down 20.
Have this, right. No. And then you're just like, then you want to tear your hair out and you don't ever want to watch again. So I'm fascinated by this whole idea of that you're like emotionally, like it you have too much invested in it emotionally to a point where you're like, I don't want that to suck out my energy, my positive vibes. I need to function in my life. And so I'm just going to turn it off.
Yeah. And that's something that I really haven't gotten to that place. It's been that the losses have been so bad, like teams that they shouldn't be losing to, and games where they've been down so much. Like, all of these losses have been really bad losses. So that's where I'm finally like, okay, I can't do this anymore. It's putting me in a bad mood. I don't want to be in this place. I need to go find something that's a little bit more productive or that's putting me in a better spot. Like, one random thing is that I haven't ever watched Star Wars. That's something I've never
ever?
In my life. I've never watched Star Wars.
Ever.
So
any of Star Wars?
No. So my husband and I have been watching
ready. Where did you grow up?
I know. I don't know why.
Did you go to the movies growing up?
My husband and I tried to start watching when we were dating, like from the beginning, the first one that came out, and I fell asleep three separate times.
What?
Watching it. And so I just have never gotten into it. I've never watched it. So we've been watching that, and I've actually, some of the game nights.
Wait a minute.
I'm like.
So you're saying that you would rather watch Star Wars, that you fall asleep in the first 3 minutes.
No.
And no, it's okay if you feel this way. So wait, I'm confused. So you don't want to watch Star Wars, or you're going to watch Star Wars because you can't watch the Jazz anymore?
No, I've been making the conscious decision instead of watching a Jazz game to sit down with my sons and my husband and watch Star Wars a little bit more. So that's
a big departure for you because you've been watching the Jazz faithfully for the past 10 years.
Yes.
I mean, through thick and thin and through all of these things. And so you're turning it off right now.
I am. And
why? Okay, there's got to be more to this. What else is going on?
It's just that, honestly, it feels like the effort has been really not there. That's been super frustrating.
From the players.
Like, and I mean, I'm not playing, so I don't know. I don't know what that feels like. But for me, watching just missed free throws, missed layups, you know, and not going back for offensive rebounds. Those types of things are really, you know, bad passes, turnovers. They start to wear on me when I'm watching.
Oh,
that.
I know that feeling because it's all of the, like, and it's not like they miss shots. They feel like they're like painfully missed. Like they doink off of the backboard or the rim.
Sometimes they're not even hitting near the rim.
I was trying to be nice there, but yes. And it's just like, but because don't you think it's hard when they're paid all of this money?
Yeah.
It's all they do.
Yeah.
Right? And you're like a mom, right? You can run a household.
kind of.
Well, don't just go along with me. And so it's hard, isn't it? Because it's like there is one thing you can control.
Yeah.
You can control effort. Like you can go, you guys can at least try hard.
Yeah.
And so it's hard. I get it. It's hard when you watch these professional athletes and you're sitting there going, I wish so badly that the effort or they'd at least try to be in these games. Cause it almost feels like with these blowout losses that you're literally sitting there going, I don't even want to turn on the game at all.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of it is I've been really busy. This time of year is so busy. And so a lot of the games.
So what keeps you busy?
Oh, exercise classes, school programs, Christmas parties,
things going on. It's
just
a busy time of year.
Tons of stuff. Yeah. So I'm recording all of the games, but then I see that they are losing by 20 points, these crazy blowout games. And I don't even want to go watch to see, because I just know that it's, you know what I mean?
What's going
to
happen?
Like I said, it's
going to be poor effort.
Yeah.
They're not going to play well. They're going to get blown out. And so you record the games.
Yeah.
But then you what? You don't even watch them at all?
I haven't been watching a lot of them when they've been these bad games. But one of the things is I always have recorded every game, and good games I'll rewatch. You know what I mean? I'll watch them more than one time. So it's just kind of, I don't know. It's hard to know the what's going on with the team.
So you're a person who goes, I am the biggest fan in the world. Like I am so loyal, and I watch all the games, and if I'm busy, I'm going to record the games, and I'm actually going to not miss anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden this team right now, and because it's perplexing where the Jazz made all of these moves, and the people that I've talked to who are Jazz people, and they go, this team has been built to compete for a championship in the West.
Yeah.
So there's a massive expectation, and we're 24 games into the season, and you, one of the super fans for the Utah Jazz, says, I would rather go to the dentist and have my teeth pulled right now. I mean, that's where your priorities. I mean, there are things you would rather do right now than to actually watch the Jazz play.
Yeah, yeah. And it's actually depressing for me. It's a bummer because I don't want that to be the case. I want to be as involved as I always have been and feel like I'm always going to support them. But that doesn't mean that I always have to watch them when I don't feel like they're giving it, you know, I don't know. I guess the main thing is that we've seen them play so much better. And so that's where the effort really starts to hurt it, is because they've played so well and the effort is just...
It's just not there.
Yeah.
Yeah, believe me, I love talking to you about this because I'm a huge Utah Jazz fan. I have been my whole life. And I feel your pain. I really do. And so these things you're saying, I'm glad that it's just not me, and I'm not the only crazy person here. All right, we're going to take a break right now, but when we come back, we've had some off-season acquisitions. We're going to talk about, have they done well or maybe not? We'll find out. All right, you're listening to KSL's Unrivaled. We'll be back in a minute. All right, welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell here with Alexis Holt, who is the super fan of the Jazz. She's a 36-year-old mother of four boys, and she's been a huge Utah Jazz fan. She's a big Twitter follower, and she says what's on her mind, and sometimes it's not very pretty. So we love to have her on our show. We love to have her tell us about what's really going on with the Jazz from a Jazz fan's perspective, but not just a Jazz fan, a mother of four Jazz fan who, because you know, moms, they don't pull punches. They're like, and especially a mom of four boys. You almost have a basketball team, Alexis.
I know.
So are you working towards that? Is that something, is that none of my business kind of thing?
No, we're going to have a co-ed team.
Oh.
We've got five with my husband, and I can come off the bench and be a scorer.
Oh, so it's, you're the sixth man.
Yes.
Okay. Or the sixth mom. You're the sixth mom. I like
sixth
that.
Sixth mom of the year.
Beautiful. All right. So the Jazz right now are actually leading just early in the third quarter, 67-64 in Minneapolis. And the Jazz have looked pretty well. They've looked a whole lot better than they did Monday night. And I think it's a perplexing thing right now where we see the Jazz have kind of, they've really struggled. I mean, they're 13-11. They're in the sixth spot in the NBA. And I think there's been a lot going on in the fall here that has maybe distracted our attention. But now we feel like, okay, we're really going to start dialing in on the Utah Jazz. And we went into this season with some massive expectations.
Yes.
And with all of these off-season acquisitions, things have really kind of upped our hopes, right?
I agree, yeah. It wasn't just... You know, it wasn't just in Utah either. It was all over. Everyone was talking about the acquisitions and how well they were going to do and where that put the Jazz in the West, and that was, you know, at the top. They were at the top.
So it wasn't like our Homer half-baked, you know,
no.
like pie in the sky, unrealistic expectations. People around the country, NBA people, national analysts felt like there were some massive moves that were fair, you know, that really put the Jazz in a good spot. And so I want to ask you, so far in the season, it's only 24 games, but still it's quite a few games. I mean, it's more than a quarter of the season for sure. How have these acquisitions fared out? So let's start with Mike Conley. Where are you on Mike Conley?
So I feel like Mike Conley has, it's been a hard road for him so far. I don't think that he has put forth enough to justify his cost, which has been disappointing. You know, there's probably a lot of reasons why the Jazz brought him in.
He's overpaid.
He's overpaid, and which I think that.
So how like how mad does that make you?
It was frustrating
as
for
a mom.
Me. It was frustrating for me because most people know that I really like Ricky Rubio, and I don't think that I know. Most people don't think that he was the best fit for the team, and I also agree with that. I can see that.
But did you like him because he was good, or did you like him because he was Ricky Rubio? Because we have Amber over here in the old booth, and Amber was a big fan of Ricky Rubio, and it's like
I don't know a female that's not a big fan of Ricky Rubio.
And you might have some males too,
yes.
But because you know he's very soft on the ice.
Yes.
He really is. I get that.
But the thing about that is that Ricky Rubio was half the cost. And so not to say that he, you know, that Mike Conley,
But don't you think that's kind of easy to say right now?
It's easy to say right
because,
now.
Because it hasn't worked out.
Right. If it would have worked out the way that everyone thought that it would, it would be
Ricky who?
Yeah, it'd be a different discussion.
Yeah, Ricky was just kind of... His eyes were a little bit. You would find ways that Ricky wouldn't look so hot right now. And speaking, so we have the statistics. Interesting enough, so last year, Ricky Rubio compared to Ricky Rubio's last year with the Jazz, and then you have Mike Conley, and Ricky Rubio actually the numbers are fairly even. So their field goal percentage of their 3-point field goal percentage is about the same, slightly higher for Mike Conley. But what's interesting is their 2-point field goal range, Ricky Rubio was a full percentage point better. And you would even say that was like people thought Ricky Rubio couldn't shoot.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that was kind of his bugaboo. It was his downfall. And so Mike Conley's had his worst year as a pro. I mean, it's been really ugly. But the points, the assists, Rubio actually has a couple more assists or an assist and a half more. And the points, it's about one point more for Mike Conley. So it's not been marketably better.
I think Ricky Rubio in last year had the...
So you just like Ricky Rubio.
No, I think he had the advantage of being... in the system for a year prior to that.
Got it. So
I think that you
I thought Ricky Rubio was better his first year.
Yeah.
Don't you think so?
Yeah, I do think.
I think he got his feelings hurt.
I do too. And he kind of went downhill at the end of the year.
Because he got really sad eyes.
He has always sad eyes.
But they were really sad. You could tell that, like, they hurt his feelings.
Yeah, I think they did.
Yeah, and that's just not a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
Not at all.
But on the same hand, like... I don't know. I think that Mike's shooting has been so poor that it really hasn't let people, you know, he hasn't played terrible overall. The shooting has made him seem worse, or that his play has been worse than it was.
He seems to me like he's a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
In the system.
Yeah.
Like, and people are talking about Quinn Snyder's system's complicated. He's in a different role. He's not. And I can tell you from my experience as a professional athlete, changing systems is a big deal.
Yeah.
If the system doesn't fit you, it can be challenging. And I just get a sense that there's a little bit of that going on.
Yeah. And I think that means that he will get better. I think that will get much better over the course of the year, and he'll feel more comfortable. I mean, he's a pro. He's been in the league forever. And so I think that he will. It's just a learning curve. He'll get there, but it's just going to take time.
Okay. We got a little bit of time here. The bench has been abysmal.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. So we actually looked at the plus minus. So the plus minus, for all of you people out there that don't know, because I haven't always known this my whole life. Basically, when you're on the court, does the team score more points or fewer points? And it's so if they're, you know, if they get three more points, whatever, it's a good indicator of how the team's doing when you're on the court. So basically, the entire bench for the Utah Jazz is somewhere between a point to 3 points in the negative, and the starters are kind of, it's totally flipped. And so the bench has really been abysmal for the Utah Jazz.
They have. And I don't think we expected a lot from the bench. Moutier came here saying that he was coming for developmental. And so I think we kind of could expect that. Jeff Green is Jeff Green. And Ed Davis, you know, he was hurt. He's been hurt. So we haven't really had a lot of...
And these were players that go... They've been good players.
Yeah.
Ed Davis and Jeff Green are great support players. And they came to Utah because they saw the chance for a championship.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take another break. Good stuff here. When we come back, what are we going to do now? Like, we have options, and we got to figure out what we're going to do as fans for the Utah Jazz. You're listening to KSL's Unrivaled. We'll be back in a minute. Don't leave us.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Carey on KSL News Radio.
They're well coached. It's hard to win in Utah. They have the defensive player of the year, Rudy Gobert, who's arguably top five centers in the league. I love the additions of the off-season additions in Jeff Green, Mike Conley, Bogdanovich, Ed Davis. You know, you have those guys. I'm a big fan of Royce O'Neal as a young special talent. And then last but not least, you look at Donovan Mitchell. So I wouldn't be surprised. They're my sleeper pick to if they was to happen to win the NBA title.
All right, there you have it. Do you have Kendrick Perkins? He said this at the beginning of the season. So he's a national analyst, and he's like, hey, look, this Utah Jazz team, don't cut them out because, they're legitimate. So what you have here is, you know, it's not just us. It's not crazy town here locally. It's like national people actually talking. By the way, the Jazz are up 87-78 now with about 2.5 minutes to go. Of course, somebody got upset. That would be Coach Quinn Snyder, and got a technical foul with good reason because, you know, we got hacked and the refs didn't call it. They don't call anything anyways. All right, Alexis.
Yes.
We're at this point, right? And we're fans.
Yeah.
What are we going to do now? Because there's three options that I see, okay? And so let's talk about option number one. We're going to play a little game show here.
Okay.
Okay? You tell me what you think about this. So option number one is just write it out, right? Because the last couple of years, the Jazz kind of have had this slow start, and they've gotten it together. And the Jazz are actually better this year as far as their win-loss total than they have the previous 2 years. So they're actually doing better even though they're kind of they're frenetic. They're kind of chaotic here in how they've been playing. Do you like that option? Should we just ride this out and just see what happens?
I think it is a reasonable option because I think that there was so much turnover with the roster this year. I think I heard that there were 10 new players on the roster this year, which is a ton. And so it's going to take some time. And the people who came in, I mean, you heard that on the clip, they are great additions, and everyone thought that. There has been some poor play. Ed Davis was hurt. And so once that all starts to kind of gel, I think that is a viable option to just kind of let that see where it goes. I mean, this has kind of been how it's been at the beginning of the year at this time. Jazz fans are, you know, wanting to fall off a cliff because they have been, you know, last year, what, it was 13 or 11 and
13. They're two games better than they were a year ago at this point.
Yeah, and so, but the reason why it's been so bad this year in my mind is just how bad the losses have been. And
right.
How, you know, that's where, at least before, they were losing kind of dumb games, but they weren't being blown out in games that they should have won. And so I think that's where the difference is.
See, I think the Jazz, this is my personal opinion, I don't know that this is a bad option, okay? Because I think that the Jazz actually, I think they have a good team, and I just get a sense that when they just really get it all together, when they're really cruising on all cylinders and they and everyone kind of gets in their groove, figures out their place, because I don't think that's – I don't think the Jazz have figured that out. I don't think people know who I am, what I'm doing.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And so I'm kind of the let's just wait and see here for a little while, because I think this team is better. But here's where it's frustrating to me. What about the LA Lakers?
Yeah.
Well, you know what I'm saying? Because it's like, come on, the Lakers, they have all these new players.
Yeah.
And they're leading the NBA. It's like, what's the difference?
Well, the Lakers have two of the top five players in the league. And so that is quite a jump from where we're at. So that makes sense. But, you know, I was in here and I said that you guys all laughed at me when I said that the Lakers were going to be one of the top teams. And they've proven that. It's, you know,
so you just think you're really smart.
Yeah,
now.
I am.
No, oh, you're one of those. No, it's like, no. See, no, actually, I feel the same way, because I told you so. You should have listened to me. I was right about this. Here, you know, it's funny because we actually have people in our building who do shows here on KSL News Radio, and they are massive Laker fans.
Yeah.
Right. In the next hour, I got Mitch Harper. He's a huge Laker fan.
Why?
And they grew up in Utah. Right. Yeah. And I know why.
Kobe.
Because no, it's Kobe. what you talked about in the very first segment, and you said I only have so much emotional cachet, right?
Yeah.
And I can't just give it all up on the Jazz. So I have to kind of monitor what emotional investment I'm going to put into this, and I think these people said, I just want to be around a winner.
Yeah.
And they were winning at the time, and they were winning championships. And so it's easy. So your emotions, it's almost it's a way to protect your heart,
yeah,
to protect your emotions, because it's hard being a fan of a team and being a Jazz fan. Yeah. This is hard. No championships ever.
Well, and it's funny because I have friends that I know, and they didn't even grow up in the United States, and they're Jazz fans because of the Carl and John years. And it's because they were winning, and that was such a fun and, you know, awesome team going to the finals. And so having a winning team really does help people, you know, they clam onto you, even if they're not even in the same country.
See, I like to suffer. And so I want, but it also helps me appreciate when they win.
Yeah.
Like it's like, I live on John Stockton hitting that 3-pointer against the Houston Rockets to go to the finals. Like, yeah, to me, that's one of my big life events as a fan, right? I couldn't imagine what it would be like to actually win a championship. That'd be crazy.
Yeah.
All right. So another option we have here is actually there might be the possibility of some trades. And here's what some folks had to say about potential trade victims to the Utah Jazz.
Kevin Love is going to get traded. I don't know what team. I think it'd be more of a contending type of team that would try to trade for him.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a contending team. Like a team, where does Kevin Love make sense? A team that's in the playoffs, or that projects to be in the playoffs, that needs to be bolstered. That needs to be bolstered in the front line. So a team like Utah makes sense, because Kevin Love could give them more spacing for somebody like Rudy Gobert, more spacing for Donovan Mitchell. Utah offense, you know, it comes and goes. Sometimes they're more defensive than offensive, but I think that could be something that could actually work out.
All right, Brendan Haywood, about Kevin Love actually coming to the Jazz.
Yeah.
Kevin Love's been a successful player. Is our trade something that would be considered here? Because Kevin Love, there's no way you can get Kevin Love.
I don't think
he's too
can,
much money.
Yeah, I don't think we can get Kevin Love this year.
Do
but,
we want him?
Well, I mean, he would make a difference.
Is he in the Ricky Rubio?
No.
Okay.
No, it's right. Not that. Right. He's in the category where he would give us more at the four position than anyone who's playing the four right now. So he does bring that, but I don't think that we could bring him in. But I do think that a trade is something that can really make a difference, because we had Crowder come in, and the Jazz were really struggling 2 years ago through the winter and had a horrible December, and they ended up going on that run. It was crazy, and it was almost a historic way to end the season. And that really turned things around. And then last year we had Korver come in, and that really seemed to right the ship at least somewhat too. So there is, it does seem that there is a benefit to bringing in a new fresh player who can kind of fix the issues that you're seeing in the first half or the first quarter of the year,
which is the bench. The bench scoring has been kind of a challenge. So some more of these role type players, and there's the possibility of actually having someone like that show up for the Jazz. Okay, well, we have to take another break. I know it's a bummer, but we're gonna do it anyway. Okay. Coming back, we only have one more segment.
I know.
And then it's over.
So quick.
It goes fast, doesn't it? All right, when we come back, we have our KSL MVPs, unrivaled MVPs coming up. We have some good ones, and they're all basketball. All right. Welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell. We have Alexis Holt here tonight. We've been talking about the Jazz. And, of course, Alex Carey is on special assignment.
I can see the red tail lights and the Spaniard.
Alex is in Spain. That little turkey. I'll tell you what, that's just wrong. Good for Alex. So we're having a good time. We've been talking about the Jazz. Alexis is a massive Twitter follower and super fan of the Utah Jazz. And, of course, she's a mother of four boys, five really, because she has a husband. So it's five boys and just a super, super fan of the Jazz. And so she's had major frustrations this season. We've had her on our show before. And she kind of speaks her mind and how it is on the old social media world. So we like to have her here. So we have this special segment. Before I get into it, though, the Jazz are up 101-84 with about 9:50 to go in the fourth. They're playing the Minnesota Timberwolves, and they actually have played fairly decent tonight. You just never know with the Jazz, but they're playing good tonight. Look, things are hopeful. Yes. Of course, Mike Conley's still out, and, of course, the jury's still out on him, but right now, you're aware of what happens, right? We're going to do our MVPs?
Yes.
And you have an MVP?
I have an MVP.
Okay, and these are people who have won the day for us. So right now, it's time for KSL's Unrivaled MVPs.
The Unrivaled MVP. Scott and Alex crown tonight's most valuable player. The Unrivaled MVP.
All right, Alexis. We usually, like Alex and I kind of have a competition about this, like who gets the better MVP.
Okay.
And when we have guests, the guests usually go first. So I'm going to let you go first. So please tell me who your MVP is. Realize, though, we're always competing here. So you better have a good one.
I think I'm going to win.
Oh, well, there you go. I like the confidence. All right. Who's your MVP?
My MVP is Jerry Sloan. 13 years ago today, won his 1,000th game.
Tonight, Jerry Sloan wins number 1,000.
All right. So he's your MVP tonight.
Yes.
So Jerry Sloan was, tell me about Jerry Sloan.
He's incredible.
He's incredible?
Yes.
He's the incredible edible egg? What is he?
The head coach of the Utah Jazz was the head coach of the Utah Jazz for so many years. And he won, it was his 1,000th game today, 13 years ago, against the Dallas Mavericks. They beat them 101-79. And Jerry's just an icon. He's a Utah icon.
So as a player, he was kind of the guy, they say he brought his lunch pail to work.
Yep.
He was a working man's pro as a player for the Chicago Bulls and a very tough, hard-nosed player and coach. Yes. And he brought a culture to the Utah Jazz. You had Frank Layden who came here, who is one of my favorite people of all time. Like if he was on the show tonight, I would say, welcome to KSL's Unrivaled. We have Frank Layden, and then I would close the show and he'd talk the rest of the time. So he brought kind of a fun approach, but Jerry Sloan really took the Jazz to a new level, took them to two NBA finals and created a culture here.
Yeah.
That was one of, we're going to play really good, sound, fundamental basketball. We play the game hard. We show up every night and we play in really short shorts.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and I think short shorts. I think that's the,
that was a thing.
I know, okay. It was. But
how do you feel about short shorts?
I prefer middle of the road shorts.
Okay, middle of the road. All right. Okay.
Not too long. But I think that has really carried over, and that culture is still here, which I think is incredible. I think Quinn expects the same hard-nosed defense, and he is a defensive coach. And when we talk about like Jazz DNA for the guys, and you know, guys that are good fits here, I feel like that kind of is synonymous with saying that it would be a good player under Jerry Sloan and the type of ball that he wanted people to play.
Yeah, and of course his health has been in decline.
Yes,
and which is a hard thing to see. You know,
it's really
when our legends and our superstars, and really when anyone has this happen in their life, your heart certainly goes out for him. So that actually happened 13 years ago on this very night.
Yep.
So hopefully this will be great karma for the Utah Jazz to win one for the old coach Sloan, awesome MVP. All right, so I'm going to give you my MVP.
Okay.
All right. And I was going to do Wayland Baptist J.J. Culliver, who's the second NAIA player ever to score 100 points in a game. That's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Have you ever – did you play basketball, by the way?
I didn't play basketball.
Okay. So you never got to 100 points.
Well, I played on the, you know, the arcade shooting.
Oh, yes.
I got 76 points.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're legit.
Yeah. I can shoot.
Were they three-pointers or two-pointers?
Some of them.
Some of them were three-pointers. Yeah. All right. So you have some skills.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I hate that game.
Not athletic skills.
Right.
But just
skills.
I can shoot.
Yeah. You've developed a certain set of skills through your life. Yes, the balls are too small, and I can't get a good form, so it doesn't work for me. And I thought, you know, he was good. And then, of course, Vince Carter, by the way, who's playing in his 1,500 game. So he's one of only four players, or he's the fifth player ever in the NBA history to actually do that.
Yeah, that's incredible.
That was a good one, right?
Yeah.
But I went with Damon Lillard. So he, of course, played at Weber State. And now, of course, he plays for the Portland, I don't know who they are. Portland, I know who they are. Come on, give me a break. So Damian was actually inducted into the Big Sky, and he's actually a member of the very first Hall of Fame class for the Big Sky. And he was, of course, he was an MVP. So he comes from Oakland, California. And came to Weber State,
yeah.
Right? And it's not a basketball power, and that to me has always been super impressive. That he's become a legitimate star, in the NBA. You know, he's one of the top 15 guys in the whole league, and he came from our little Weber State in Ogden, Utah, which is a really cool thing. He actually scored 1,934 points during his time as a Wildcat. He's there. All-time leader in free throws with 520, and his jersey has been retired. And so he's part of that first class of the Big Sky Conference's Hall of Fame class. Okay, great MVPs tonight. I'm going to say that you won because, of course, we have our Jerry, you know.
We revere him.
It's a Jazz night. Yes, and we do revere him. All right, well, it's about time to say goodbye here for this hour. Coming up in the next hour, I actually have Mitch Harper from KSLSports.com, and, of course, he does Cougar Tracks and Cougar Sports Saturday for KSL. And so we're excited. He'll be in the next hour. Thank you so much for joining us, Lexi. We're going to take a break here. By the way, Utah Jazz right now with about 7:30 to go are up 109-89. So that's a whole 20 points.
Yeah, that's
the Jazz might win tonight.
They flipped.
Oh my
they're
goodness!
They're losing by 20.
How
they're
exciting
winning by
is
20.
That?
Yeah,
that's amazing.
I'm happy about it.
I'm beyond happy. Again, thank you so much, Lexi.
Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. We're going to take a break.
They won! KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome on into the second hour of KSL's Unrivaled. I'm Scott Mitchell, and in this hour, we have the pleasure of having Mitch Harper from KSL Sports. He's the BYU insider, and of course, he has Cougar Sports Saturday on Saturdays, and hasn't had a lot of them this fall. Saturday's shown up, but his show hasn't, and then he's the Cougar Tracks guy. You hear him all over the place. He's everything you need to know about BYU sports, and so thanks for joining the second hour here and helping fill in while Alex is on assignment in Spain.
Yeah, thank I'm happy you. To be here, Scott. I'm excited to be with you. Last Friday I was feeling for you, man. I was like, is Scott going to be okay? Is he going to go return to Unrivaled?
Mitch, it's over. Let's just not talk about
Alex
it anymore.
I knew Alex was going to be gone, so I was like, is Scott going to be there this week? I was kind of concerned about the show, so excited to be here. Know that you're here as well, so it's going to be a fun hour.
Yeah, it will be. We're going to talk a little BYU. We're going to talk 2-minute drill, some of the bowl games, what's happening. But right now on our 8:05 cut, we're going to talk about the president of the NCAA had something to say about this whole name, image, and likeness thing, and that's our 8:05 cut.
The cut at 8:05. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
So, Mitch, I was doing fine, okay, until you opened up the wound there. And we may talk about it later on, but we're not going to talk about it right now. All right, so Mark Emmett, who is the president of the NCAA, had kind of this question and answer situation about the potential of players profiting from their name and their image and their likeness, basically getting paid while they're in college. I think everyone's recognizing that this is going to happen. It's already happened. There are several states that have actually signed it into law, and there's no way that they can stop this, and so I think the NCAA is trying to maybe get out ahead of it a little bit, or at least kind of embrace it. So he had some things to say about it, and I just kind of want to throw a little bit of what he said and kind of where, you know, what you think about where they're kind of headed with this. The one thing he did bring up was this idea that they want Congress involved. And, of course, Mitt Romney, who's a senator from the state of Utah, has actually been very, very involved in this. And from what I understand, very informed. He's not just a kind of a figurehead. He's really, well, he's good with numbers. Let's put it that way. So they want Congress involved in this so that it's level across the board. You have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great idea because I think that also it highlights that the NCAA is acknowledging that we are getting to a point where there's going to be name, image, and likeness benefits to these athletes. I've always thought that the student athletes should be getting some sort of cut, not necessarily like from TV contracts, but have the ability to go do an autograph session or do a, like this show right here, do a radio show and make some money from it, because college sports, it's no longer just this million-dollar industry. We're talking billions, and it's not each individual university, but the whole organization, they're making billions of dollars. And I don't think every student athlete's going to be making tons of money, but they should get a little bit of a cut. So I like the fact that the NCAA is somehow, some way getting a little progressive, because I think they're the most crooked organization around. So it's refreshing to see that they're trying to be somewhat progressive. But at the same time, Scott, I'm thinking to myself, what's the angle that they're trying to take here to still kind of hose and have it hose the athletes and still get their way in return?
Well, I'll just refer back to when free agency happened in the NFL. They go, this is going to mess everything up. You know, there's no way, you know, there's no way they can support this. There's so much more money than they ever thought. And I really think that, because college football is a big business, just like the NFL, and they don't pay the players, you know, and in the NFL, they actually pay the players. There's so much revenue. There's no way it's going to hurt the game there. And I believe it'll actually enhance it. I think the reason they're getting concerned is, and why they're trying to be proactive, is that they don't want a lawsuit. They're going to get a lawsuit. They've probably been informed you're going to lose a lawsuit. You want to go through this, you're going to look really bad,
and you're going to lose at the end of the day. So you might as well figure out how to get involved in this and how and actually how to profit from it. And the NCAA will definitely profit from this. If they had a legitimate playoff system, they played players, they created, because what you're essentially going to do is by promoting your game through these players, you're actually going to generate more interest. And that could be a driving force, because it feels like there's a waning interest in sports, in football. Notre Dame didn't have sellouts this year. So I think they're realizing we have to do something.
You know, that's a great point too, Scott, because I think that you look at the NBA, it's a star-driven league. People aren't into just the teams. They're into individual athletes. And I think that's an angle I don't think people probably have brought up enough, because I think that, you know, elevating a certain individual, like we saw at Utah, the Huntley for Heisman campaign, but take it to a grander scale where he can, you know, do advertisements and marketing. And I think that would be good for everyone involved. It'd be good for the student, because then they could get compensated. But also, I think just the exposure, because fans love seeing these student athletes. They want to learn their stories more. And right now with college sports and how these college football programs are so tightly guarded, I mean, coaches are so paranoid.
Can't talk
these
to
days.
The players.
They
you
don't
can't
want
do
anything,
anything
to get out. Yeah. It could be a great opportunity for these athletes to really showcase themselves more and take on a bigger role. And I think you're right that it might not, I don't think once we get to a point where this has become a national thing, because I do think it's going to get to that point where every state, every program is going to be allowed to have these student athletes, you know, make money off their image and likeness. I think it's not going to suddenly change college football. We're still going to have a sport where it's still right below the NFL, but I think the interest will go up. It'll be like the cost of attendance still. A couple years ago in college football, everyone thought the cost of attendance is going to change college football. These athletes are going to get now $4,000, $5,000, whatever it was. And really, we're not even talking about it today. I think it's going to get to that point where it'll happen. The market will show that only a handful of student athletes get the opportunity to really make some serious money. But overall, it's still going to be college football. It's still going to be a sport that everyone enjoys, and I think interest will definitely go up.
Look, they promote Trevor Lawrence. They promote Tua at Alabama, all those things. And they actually, that won't change. They're still going to promote the players. But you're going to get local interest. Actually, I think you can get more local interest.
That's a good point.
With your team if you're able to do that. And, you know, you just take a Tyler Huntley and, you know, he goes and he promotes Ken Garf and he's on all these commercials, whatever. Because I and we just have a couple of minutes, but the next thing was they were concerned that this would actually create a haves and a have not situation, that the haves would just have more and the nots would have less than they actually would. And I disagree with that. I'm curious as to what you think.
I think for, you know, and I look at it from a BYU standpoint, because they would fit in that conversation. Would they go to the have nots? I think they'd be more aligned with the haves, because BYU's got a huge fan base and a passionate one, and a lot of companies very interested in BYU. So I think it could help. I think programs like you know, New Mexico State that are at the bottom of the barrel, I think, yeah, those programs I think would struggle, and I think they would fall farther behind. But I think recruits would be more inclined to want to go to those programs that have passionate fan bases, that have a lot of interest. So I think there would be a separation, but I think it could help a program BYU.
You might get a player at BYU or at Utah,
yeah,
that maybe you wouldn't have, because he goes, look, I can be a big fish here and be in a good school, and there may be some enticement to that. All right, we're going to take a break. But when we come back, speaking of BYU, I guess there's more practice. And practice makes perfect.
We talk about practice, Scott.
We like to talk about practice. Which BYU players are actually going to benefit the most from practice? Stick around. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell with Mitch Harper from KSL Sports, KSL's Cougar Sports Saturday, and, of course, Cougar Tracks. A lot of cougar in there.
Row! Row! Scott, row!
You know what that sounds like over the overhead, don't you?
Yeah.
Sounds like someone flushing a toilet, just so you know.
Yeah, my Cougar Grill is not as good as Gregor Bell's.
I went through the same thing when I was with the Detroit Lions. If you're inside and you do that, like, kind of the growl of a cougar, sounds like a toilet flushing. But, you know, that's nothing against BYU. It's just cougars and lions, I guess. All right, so according to Mitch Harbor, hey, wait a minute, that's you.
That is.
You wrote an article on KSLSports.com. You can go to KSLSports.com, find everything sports-related. You can actually get our show in podcast form. So if you don't catch us on the radio, because we know you don't drive for 2 hours. I mean, we have people that just get in their car and drive around for 2 hours and listen to us. We love those people. Thank you very much. It's my family, by the way. But other than that, if you miss parts of the show, you're not going to miss anything, which is really cool. Love podcasts, and you can find them on KSLSports.com or anywhere you find your podcasts. Anyways, you wrote this article, and it's about the process of bowl practice and how it's extremely beneficial. And I remember when I was a high school football coach, where we were limited in the time we could practice, just like in college. There's certain practice times and there's moratorium times and all the, you know, you can only spend so much time with these players. And if we were, if we lost in the playoffs in high school, then we could continue practicing all the way through the state championship. So you could practice almost a month, and it was, and we did it actually. Most of the time we were in the playoffs, but there was time when we actually did it. And the same thing happens at BYU, or really for any school. And I think it's an awesome perspective to have, especially when you have these young players. So BYU kind of has adopted that philosophy. And talk about some of these players that actually will benefit the most from this.
Well, and the thing that's interesting is Kalani has made it clear that this is kind of like this bowl practice period. It's kind of like a second spring football where they get 15 or so practices and they can really project and evaluate the young guys. So it's a beneficial opportunity. But one of the notable players that I think these bowl practices will serve them well is starting at the top, Zach Wilson, quarterback. And I think that's where it all starts and kind of ends with BYU. That performance in the regular season finale for BYU against San Diego State, it was a huge letdown, Scott. I know BYU already knew their bowl destination, the Hawaii Bowl, but coming off the heels of Kalani's extension and to have that performance where they – to come off that performance where they had –
Your time's up, Mitch. Sorry. We're going to have to end the program right now. Thanks for joining us.
Sorry there, but to come off that performance where they only put up 3 points and Kalani gets his extension, I think it's raised again some questions about BYU's offense and particularly Zach Wilson. So he's got to improve because I think he's shown that I think he's clearly BYU's best quarterback, in my opinion. I feel like he's got the highest upside, the potential, but his decision-making has been in question sometimes, and he's always looking for that deep ball. Kind of just go with a little bit of the dink and dunk like we saw from Baylor Romney. So I think these practices to continue to get healthy with the shoulder, with the thumb, that'll be beneficial for Zach Wilson, but also, too, Jaren Hall. Jaren Hall looked dynamic against Utah State last month.
Is Jaren actually able to play then? I mean,
yeah, he's fully cleared.
I just heard his head was, there were a lot of concerns about it and that he should retire and just go play baseball.
Well, see, and I thought like that as well. I heard those rumblings early on after he suffered that second concussion against Utah State. I thought Jaren's probably going to be a guy that's going to be out for the rest of the season, and that was the buzz. But he's now practicing, and he's going to be available most likely for that Hawaii Bowl coming up on Christmas Eve. So he'll be practicing as well, and BYU's now suddenly got 3 scholarship quarterbacks. You got Baylor Romney, who's still battling a little bit of an illness and recovering from his foot injury. So Zach Wilson's a great opportunity for him, but also young guys as well in the program to show that they're building that depth, which, again, is becoming a big focus for BYU.
One of the things you can do in college that is unique, and you can get a lot of work out of practice with a lot of guys because you have the numbers. You know, you got like 100 players. So you can have 2 huddles going at the same time, and you can just churn through a lot of plays in practice and get a lot of reps for people because, you know, if you're like Jaren Hall – And you're in season, it's hard for you to get the reps that you normally would want to get. Where this becomes more like spring football, it's kind of like everyone's invited to the party now, and it's a different thing. And I don't know that people really fully understand the value of that and how because you can run 2 offensive lines and 2 really position groups, and they can be ones and ones or whatever, and you just one huddle goes and calls up in the next huddle, and they do it all the time. And you can't do it in the pros because you don't have the same numbers or really in high school. So if you're really organized in how you do things, you can get a lot done with a lot of these other players like Baylor Romney, like Jaren Hall. There's also a different philosophy about the mindset of practice going into these bowls, where a lot of coaches say, yeah, we understand that situation because we'd like our young guys to play, but you also have seniors, and the seniors are like, I'm done, right? This is the icing on the cake for me. I'm going to kind of go in cruise control, and I'm curious, did he address that at all, or is there any thought process about, you know, what do we do with the guys that aren't coming back,
yeah,
and are they going to want to practice and with the same kind of intensity?
Yeah, Kalani addressed that, and he believes that his guys will give it their best effort in this game, but I'm skeptical, Scott, because I think this BYU team, they've shown to have letdowns, and I think this senior class, like at the end of the day, it's the Hawaii Bowl. It's a glorified exhibition. There's nothing really at stake here. BYU, they showed some tangible improvement with some big wins against USC and Boise State, but still 7-5. That was about it, and you're playing a Hawaii team that I think could potentially blow the doors off of BYU. I think this offense with the run and shoot that Hawaii has, they could put up some points, and I don't know if BYU can keep up, but hopefully BYU's players are bought in and engaged, because they've shown there's games where you're left wondering, what just happened? Where were you? Where did you guys show up? Because that San Diego State game, the Toledo game, those were big fat no-shows from BYU, and that's kind of where I think fans feel that maybe this is a team that might not show up. I feel like they're saying everything right now, but once you get to Hawaii, like the Rainbow Warriors, you know, they don't have to travel. They're going to be there. They're not wowed by the island, so it's going to be an interesting element there.
No, you know, I was going to say, you know how hard it is to like actually play in Hawaii? As if it, I don't know that I would want to play. I'd want to be like, look, let's go have a vacation. This is a fun time. Any BYU players, are they going to opt out of the game and not hurt their draft chances?
Yeah,
you hear any of that?
Not expecting any players to sit out, but I do think guys like Kyrus Tonga, defensive lineman, and tight end Matt Bushman, it's a strong likelihood that those guys both declare for the NFL draft after this bowl game. But I think those are type of players that maybe need one more data point to their body of work to show scouts, hey, this is what we did against, you know, this team. Because I still think those are guys that, at best, maybe fourth-round guys, so they need additional film to impress scouts.
All right, we're going to take a break. We come back. There are other bowl games. Actually, there's 41. And any of them any good? We'll find out in a minute. All right, welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell and Mitch Harper here. Mitch is filling in for Alex, who is on assignment in Spain. I think he's doing the running of the bowls.
That would be a very Alex Curry move to do.
It's really the running of the bowl that comes out of Alex's mouth. There's like a lot of bowl that comes out of that mouth, I'll tell you right now.
That would be a very Alex move. I hope that we get some footage and we see that on some social media while he's out there. But if there's one guy that can pull it off, it'd be Alex.
I would pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to watch Alex Curry run away from bowls. I would think that would be hilarious. Oh, my goodness.
Olay, Alex Curry.
You know, an interesting thing. So in the last segment, we were talking about practice in a bowl situation. And it's funny, because practice, you even have to, everyone accentuates practice now. It's like, you're talking about practice? You think about it, and you have these, you know, if you're going to treat it like a spring football practice, then is the bowl game actually the scrimmage? And are you going to play a lot of guys? Like, maybe you see all three of these quarterbacks in the bowl game.
Yeah, it's a good point, Scott. I mean, I think that for a lot of these games, like the Hawaii Bowl, like the Alamo Bowl, they're really nothing's on the line. I mean, I think that there's something to be said about maybe momentum going into the off season, but, you know, I think that these games, the whole bowl system to me is so frustrating. I used to love college bowl games when it was like 20 or so bowls, because I felt like every game was a great matchup. Now you're seeing 11-2 Utah play 7-5 Texas. Great brand, but is that a reward for Utah, who's had a phenomenal season, the best season in the Pac-12 era? I just get frustrated with it. You know, 12-1 Boise State gets 6-6 Washington. Teams really don't get rewarded
Chris
anymore.
Chris Peterson does not want to play.
No, they don't get rewarded anymore for special seasons. It used to feel like college football would reward you with a great bowl if you had a special season. Now it's like, unless you're in the playoff, you don't get rewarded for a special season anymore. And that's kind of frustrating with what college football has become.
It's so hard. It's so hard to feel like Utah's season was special.
I'm just telling you.
And it was. I mean, it was remarkable.
Best talent ever.
Best talent.
On a roster.
Best record they've had in the Pac-12. Best conference record they've had in the Pac-12. You know, they statistically were one of the top defenses in the country. Zach Moss is the player of the offensive player of the year. Coach Whittingham's the coach of the year in the Pac-12. None of these things have ever happened. They have, you know, I think 8 players on the first team, all conference team. So it is a remarkable season. But I got to tell you, I'm not excited about going to the Alamo Bowl. I don't, and I have to go there, and I will go there. But it just feels like such a disappointment because of the expectation. And the expectation just kept building as the season went on. And just to have that letdown in the end is just a horrible thing. So I'm curious. There are other bowl games out there. And you talk about it being watered down and maybe you don't get the same matchups. But are there any bowl games that excite you that are happening that people would want to tune into?
I do think that Vegas Bowl with Washington and Boise State. I mean, Jimmy Lake, the new head coach of Washington. I mean, Chris Peterson's going to coach in his last game, but, you know, kind of seeing the first glimpse of maybe a Jimmy Lake-led Washington team and Chris Peterson going up against his old program. There's some good storylines there, and that's going to be a pretty good matchup because we saw, you know, Washington back in November. I mean, they gave Utah everything they could handle up until Utah made a second-half run. So Washington, we know, has talent, and maybe that could be a game or a performance for the Huskies to give them some momentum heading into the offseason and say, hey, Washington looks positioned to maybe have a bounce back in 2020 and beyond. So that game intrigues me, but also, too, the Orange Bowl, I think, with, you know, Bronco Mendenhall in Virginia. They have no business being in a New Year's Six. Like, to think Utah at 11-2, they would blow the doors off of Virginia. We already know Whittingham owns Bronco as it is. They would literally annihilate Virginia, and to see them in the New Year's Six because of bowl tie-ins, it's kind of infuriating. But nonetheless, I am curious to see how that former BYU staff fares in a New Year's Six setting, because that was the stage they always wanted when they were at BYU. Now they got that chance at Virginia against Florida.
And to me, it's Florida, right? So how good is Florida? And if it's like a really close game, because everyone's like Florida, you know, other than two tough losses to Georgia and I think what was it, LSU? They'd have been right there. And, but then it's like who else? They don't play anyone else. Whatever. I'm fascinated to see what kind of game that is. And the Washington game for me is, okay, Chris Peterson's still coaching, and you're Jimmy Lake, and you're like, go. You know, you just need to leave. And I think it's hard to have that kind of lame duck coach still in there being a part of things, and everyone knows that that's kind of the end of it. I realize it's this season, finish out this whole season, but even these coaches are recognizing we're building for – next season, we're looking ahead. Yeah, there's maybe some celebration from a lot of these players, but I think those are kind of some intriguing matchups. And of course, you have the Citrus Bowl, which I think is another interesting one. With you've got Michigan, and then you have Alabama. So you have Harbaugh, who's weird, by the way. I just want you to know, Jim Harbaugh. In fact, Jim Harbaugh reminds me of Jim Carrey in The Cable Guy. Like, there's no social grace with him. He's socially awkward. I mean,
that's all real then with Harbaugh, like that awkwardness.
That's my whole point.
Dad bod, that's all awkward and real.
It is not an act.
Wow.
It is not an act at all. He is a peculiar person. He's a little bit quirky, and he just kind of goes to the beat of a different drummer. In fact, it might not even be a drummer. You may go to the beat of something else. I don't know. Maybe it's like an accordion or something, and it's just like, or harmonica, something that's just harmonica. A harmonica? He goes to the beat of a harmonica.
Yeah, that's Citrus Bowl.
That'll be fun. That'll be fun to
those
watch.
Those two brands alone going up against each other, that's going to be a really good matchup. I also am curious to see the Rose Bowl, Oregon.
Why are we curious about this? We don't care about the Rose Bowl. They should not even have their, just have the parade and that be the end of it.
I guess I'm intrigued, Scott, by the fact that, you know, Oregon goes up against the Wisconsin team and kind of just see the follow up act from Oregon, because I mean, that night, they literally looked like a team that they crushed Utah, obviously, we know that. But I'm curious to see how their offensive line fares against Wisconsin, right, and just maybe the follow-up. Because Oregon, to me, going into the Pac-12 title, it was like, you're barely getting by Oregon State, a team that Utah was just destroying. They were struggling against everyone, and then suddenly put it all together when they were flying completely under the radar. Now they're getting a lot of hype again. Curious to see how they actually fare against a formidable team in Wisconsin who gave Ohio State everything they could handle for a half. So I think that game will be interesting. I know it'll be tough for Utah fans to watch because, you know, obviously what could have been.
So, probably the last one here that's, I think, interesting is the Cheez-It Bowl with Air Force and Washington State.
Now, what intrigues you
about that one? Let me tell you what intrigues me. Washington State has no defense, so Air Force is going to run the ball all day long, and Washington's going to throw the ball all day long. And, in fact, this game may be 2 days long. It may be like a cricket match, you know, where, in fact, it's going to be more than one Cheez-It Bowl. You're going to have, like, about five or six Cheez-It Bowls of Cheez-Its you're going to eat through to watch this game. And any game that Mike Leach is in, because we love Mike Leach on our show, I'm sure he's going to have something interesting to say or do about this game. So you always have to tune into Mike Leach bowl games. All right, we're going to take a break here, go get some Cheez-Its, come back, and we got our two-minute drill. And you're familiar with the two-minute drill, right?
I am.
And we got some fun stuff in here. Some guy named Jordan Love. And Antonio. Oh, we got Kyle Van Noy, maybe. All right, stick around. We got to talk about these people. But we'll talk a little bit about a lot of things when we come back. All right, welcome back to the show. Scott Mitchell and what's his name over there? Mitch Harper. I know who he is.
Thank you, Scott.
Mitch Harper, who's with KSL Sports, and of course he does Cougar Sports Saturday and Cougar Tracks here on KSL News Radio. Been a fun show. We've had a good time. Gone extremely fast tonight. And by way of announcement, people, it's 269 days until BYU plays Utah in the season opener. Just wanted to get an old head start on that one.
Are we going
to
get the voice work like we did in the summertime? Or are we going to go 269 days? Woo, yeah!
Yes. We're going to get the cowgirl out there just, you know, at the rodeo. Woohoo! I had forgotten that until you just announced that. So I know everyone. Look, we all have to get excited about something. And you know, next year it might be the year the Cougars might.
No, Scott.
They just might win a game.
They're not doing it. As long as Witt's there, it's not happening. And now with the amended contract for Morgan Scali, it's probably never going to happen because he's a Witt disciple.
Those old amended contracts, boy, they'll get you every time. All right. So it's time for the two-minute drill. And are you familiar with the two-minute drill?
I've heard about it.
Have you heard about it? We have a little bit of music to kind of get us in the mood. Would you like me to explain the two-minute drill to you?
No, let's get after it. I'll learn on the fly. I'm a quick learner.
No, someone has to explain it. That's a given. I'm just saying,
part of the rules, the explanation?
Well, of course it is, because it's my job on the show.
Go ahead.
But I would acquiesce to you if you'd like to explain what the two-minute drill is, unless you're not comfortable, and I'll be happy to do it.
The two-minute drill is no huddle offense. Go, right. Go, let's get after it. Go,
all right,
go, up-tempo.
So, all right, exactly, because there's usually less than 2 minutes. So we like to finish the show strong, and so we talk a lot of things, or we talk about a lot of things, we say a little bit about a lot of things. And of course, we hurry because we don't have very much time, and we win the show. You good with that?
I'm good.
He's like, shut up and just tell me what we're going to do. Okay, so Jordan Love apparently has declared for the NFL draft, and he'll play in the Frisco Bowl. Is it the Frisco Bowl? Yeah, Frisco Bowl, and then he's off to the NFL, or maybe not. But is Jordan Love? Do you think he's a first round draft pick? And you think this is a good move?
I don't think so, Scott. I think that I would have told you back in the summertime he was a first round guy, but now I feel like he's slipped a little bit. I honestly thought he should have been.
Kind of feels like Utah's football season. A lot of promise in the beginning, just kind of.
Jordan Love should have been a grad transfer. I think he should have went to an Oklahoma and went with Lincoln Riley for a year.
He could still do that.
He could, but it sounds like he's intending on declaring, hiring an agent, and getting ready for the NFL draft. But so I think the key is going to be for him is I think that combine and the pro days, because teams are going to reach on quarterbacks, and if a team falls in love with Jordan Love, then he'll go in the first round. But I think right now where it stands, he'd probably be a second round player.
Yeah, that perception about this season, and you NFL teams get funny about things. And they go, oh, you know, he was better as a junior, and maybe he reached his ceiling. Because guys do that. They'll be amazing in college, and then you just see the decline. Jake Browning's a great example. Was the can't-miss guy, you know, his freshman year at Washington, and he just progressively got worse. He does have the ability to come back, though, right? Or to grad transfer. He can kind of.
But I think he's intending on hiring an agent, though.
Yeah.
So that right there would end any possibility of that. What do you think is his biggest strength, though, as being an NFL prospect?
Well, it certainly is. I mean, he can throw the ball.
Yeah.
And he actually has a good throwing motion, and he's got size. You wonder sometimes with, you know, to me what would make me nervous a little bit is here's a guy where the expectations started falling on him. And he didn't respond well to that. And you want a guy that, because there's pressure in the NFL, and you have to answer that pressure like every single week after week, and you can see where it gets on certain guys, and they can't handle that. And there's a maturing process that goes into that. I'm not saying he can't, but that would be the concern for me, where all eyes were on him, and he just kind of, he just wasn't as impressive. Okay, let's see. Apparently, Antonio Brown has gone on a Twitter rant and blames everyone but himself for, I guess, all of the things in his life. Why are we talking about Antonio Brown?
This guy finds a way to get in the headlines, I swear. And he went to Instagram and Twitter, as you mentioned, and he posted a graphic of him laying down on the ground and the media basically backstabbing him. So he's blaming the media. He's blaming the NFL owners. He's basically saying he's being blackballed here and not given a fair opportunity to get back in the league. He's done. He's never going to get back in the NFL. When you go down these waters of blaming the media, blaming the owners, we've seen the writing on the wall with Colin Kaepernick. Once you go down this well, you're never going to get back into the league. And that's going to be the case for Antonio Brown.
It's so hard because you see this all the time where you're scrutinized everything you do. Like every practice is filmed. There's a grade on every game. And so they're constantly going, okay, whose fault is it? You know, even though the team lost, you can grade out well. And you're just like, okay, I'm safe. You know, I'm safe. Or they'll go, whose fault was it on this quarterback center exchange? And it's like, it's the center's fault, you know, and so there is a little bit of a culture of the blame culture. It's not me. Like, I didn't do anything wrong. Like, I'm amazing. Like, for serious, I'm so good. And I can see a little bit of that in Antonio Brown, because even as a quarterback, you're like, it was a receiver's fault. And like, I always throw a good pass, you know, and it's almost the thing that gets you there. Like, I don't want this to sound the wrong way, but it's really true. It's the thing that gets you there is also the thing that's like your worst enemy, because if you have to have this extreme confidence, you have to just believe in yourself like beyond anything. And yet sometimes to really grow is to go, you know what? I could do better in that situation. And so there's a fine balance between. And I know Antonio Brown is a train wreck as it is, but I'm just telling you that there are that mindset isn't too far off a lot of people. They're just there. All right, the Chiefs this last week almost missed half, like 35 guys on the team were not going to have equipment for the game. So apparently what happened is They had the plane, all of their equipment on the plane when they got to Foxborough, and the stadium was being occupied by high school football. So they just left everything on the plane waiting for a time that they could offload it, because they didn't want to just hold it, I guess, I don't know, on the ground or whatever. And so the plane took off, and the plane had all their equipment on it, because it was like, look, we've chartered you, and now we're going back to work. You know, get the plane back in rotation so we can make money on it. And here, all their equipment ends up in, I think, Newark? It was like in New Jersey. And it's just like, and so apparently a high school football team, well, they were going to offer to use their uniforms and some of their equipment with the same logo as the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, man, that would have been so cool to see. An NFL team with high school apparel on. That would have been the best. I mean, how does that even happen?
This is the NFL, right?
And they would have had to forfeit, too, if they didn't have their jerseys.
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, what do you do? You know, yeah. Let's go to Dick's Sporting Goods and see if we can get a bunch of... It's like, just get a bunch of white jerseys, you know, or something. I mean, I've never heard of something like this happening. They're so stringent on everything that they do, you know, as far as, like, the planning and the travel. I mean, there was never a mistake. There was one mistake. We had a plane. We were in Cleveland, and I was playing in Cincinnati, and our plane just died. And they go, it's faster to get you on buses. We'll bus you through Ohio from Cleveland to Cincinnati as opposed to getting a new plane here. Wow. And so it's like, and that was the only, and of course it happened in Cleveland. All right. We got to take a long break here. So thank you for joining us, everyone. Thank you, Amber. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, Hunter. Thank you, Mitch, for being here tonight.
Thanks, Scott.
It's been a lot of fun, and you all have a good night. We'll catch you soon.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.